This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I think we can all acknowledge and say with a bit of relief that it's been an interesting and wonderful week. We've witnessed and participated in a peaceful transition of power in our government, and I think I can speak for everyone that we're all feeling a sense of lightness, relief, and I would even say empowerment, a mutual sense of upliftedness from this change. And it seems like it's the season itself is changing, where the days are getting longer. We've had some nice rains, and some rains are coming here at Jikoji. Things are changing. Things are there's an uplifting sense of life that I feel, and I think maybe others can associate with that. Wow, here we are. We're on the way, we're on the road. It's the future after all. A few weeks ago, we spent some time talking and about the experience of practice, the actual experience of practice, and some people shared their experiences as they practice independently, and we talked about the practice experience itself, and I thought we could continue in that vein today. Specifically, I'd like to talk about this sense of practice itself being what you might call empowering, or giving us and giving the world and giving life itself a vitality or an energy or a source. And in that same vein, I thought we could talk a little bit about what in practice we call, it's called chetana in Sanskrit, which means, literally chetana means to choose, to actually make a choice. But it's a very broad term. It also means to have an aspiration, to have intention, to actually come to an activity with intention, with a sense of purpose, a sense of intentionality, or you could say to come to this activity with a sense of direction, with a sense of purpose. Sometimes I myself and maybe other people feel a sense of a sense of disempowerment, or a sense of that the practice we're just sort of witnesses or participants or passive participants in the practice. But I'd like us to look at the sense of actually our actual intention in the practice and our adult responsibility in coming to this, doing this particular rather unusual thing that we do, that is unique to us who meditate, of being still, of being quiet, of pausing in this direct, in this particular way, but also seeing what's going on with our bodies and minds, and intending directly a way to be. So we're sort of on this road of practice together. Here's a little story from our ancestors' teachings. This is from the teacher is Dongshang, the founder of this practice thread, the Soto thread, or the Zaodong school. He's the founder of the Zaodong school. And at one time, Dongshan, a monk came to visit Dongshan, and Dongshan, he said to the monk, "Where have you come from?" And the monk said, "I've been to the mountain." Dongshan then asked the monk, "Did you reach the peak?" And the monk said, "Yes." Dongshan said, "Was there anyone on the peak?" And the monk said, "No." Dongshan said, "If that was so, perhaps you didn't reach the peak." And the monk said, "Well, if I didn't reach the peak, how could I know there was no one there?" After the monk had departed, Dongshan turned to his attendant and he said, "And to think that I doubted this fellow." I love that story because Dongshan, you know, an esteemed teacher with thousands of students and a good rep, acknowledged this young monk and his way. You know? So one by one, we, in our practice way, independently and together, and yet with all beings and all things, we so I liked in that story, I liked the confidence of the young monk, and I liked the acknowledgement of the teacher of the monk's path. And in our practice too, we can acknowledge our good work. I feel, you know, with the change in our nation with the spring, I think it's appropriate for us to acknowledge and even applaud our good work of being still and quiet and being present in this particular way, and acknowledge our strength, our power. Excuse me. Colvin Coben talked about this power of practice. And so I know some people might have trouble with the word power, but you could maybe exchange it with the, are we in? Yeah. You can kind of exchange it for virya or energy or vitality. The Sanskrit term paribhavita means to just to bring energy to something, to enliven, to make it bright. And Coben himself talked about this this sense of power in practice or energy in practice. And I'd like to read a little bit from what Coben said. And this is real kind of terse language, so pay attention to this. The language is a little tight. So Coben said about power, he said, the power of meditation and wisdom together is called Jōriki. So the power of meditation and wisdom together is called Jōriki. Jō is samadhi, ki is spiritual energy, compassion, and wisdom. Existence and the world of phenomena is power itself, but each thing doesn't have power. If you presume is power, you should. Power cannot be possessed, but it can be felt. For people who deny the existence of power, there is no power. At this level, it is just a concept. In the same way, we could deny holiness, and with that tainted concept, there is no holiness. If we begin to feel power, we see that everyone has power. Everything has power. Existence is made of power. Life is energy itself. This energy and power is generously dispersed into all beings, all things. Power is experienced when you meditate, because your meditation is the action of the denial of your personal power. So you become the center of the power, but you do not have power. It is like the experience of bowing. When you really feel your bow, when a particular existence, and you feel everything, at that time, you're ready to walk. Jōriki is like a tree standing straight in the winter and making strong rings. That strength is important to feel. We have the same action as the tree has, depending on the change of seasons, water, sunshine, so it forms rings. The experience of samadhi, concentration, and meditation makes that ring of human existence. That is the real age of a person. That is the real power of the person. So, our power, our vitality right now in this life, in this present life, in this time of our existence can find expression and can manifest in this quiet and still activity of just sitting down. We cannot own it, as Coben said. It is not a possession. It is just the expression of life itself. So, that's a little note about practice, about our practice life. I think it's good for us to remember this and to acknowledge our, you could say, our birthright in practice. That it is our what we do, and we, without pride, without self-aggrandizement, we manifest in this particular way. And it does affect the world. It does affect, it is the expression of life. Citta padika means the production of intention in our practice. So we can ask ourselves when we sit down together, what are we doing here? Why are we here? What is our intention? Are we just hanging out? Are we just taking a break from our kind of broader expression of our connection with all things. When we sit down together, we have to acknowledge that this is a this is an intentional act. It's an unusual activity where we are animate beings and we do move and we're made to move. Yet, choose, except when we sleep, of course, except when we're out. So we choose to do this particular activity of being still and quiet. And in our practice, we choose some focus. We have this sense of choosing to say, be with our breath. To just be with the kind of natural expression of our life, which is noticing a marker or of our presence. I could go on and on, but I'm wondering if I will go on and on, but I'm wondering if anyone at this point has anything they would like.
Go ahead, Peter.
Okay, thank you, Nico. Mike, if you can hear me, I was wondering how we combine or how we understand your words here about intention in our practice with Kodo Zawaki's, Koban's Zazen master, his Zazen has no purpose. Just do it. I know we do both, but can you help us see how they merge and are not in conflict?
Did Kodo Zawaki say that Zazen has no purpose?
I've heard that said many times. Of course, I didn't hear it right from homeless Kodo, but I thought that was a direct quote from him and even written in some of his words that have been written. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not a Kodo Zawaki scholar, but I've heard him for his quotes for decades, and some of them are quite startling and tend to stick with me. But I'm open to correction.
Can people hear?
Oh,
I'm wondering, Peter, if it's possible to have an intention, to have an aspiration, to have a direction, without having an intention of a result, without having an intention of a specific result, like wanting to be friend and have tea with your friend and just meet your friend and be with your friend and enjoy the presence of your friend without, you could say, a design on your friend, wanting to borrow some money or wanting his or her confirmation of your self-importance, whatever it might be. Do you understand where I'm going? Yeah.
Yes. That fits with Shikantaza, with Koban's one of his primary messages to us, one of his gifts to us was introducing us to Shikantaza and no goals, just sitting, and I can certainly see that in the sitting down to tea with your friend and not wanting anything to result from it, just to sit.
Mm-hmm. But still, there's the intention to be with your friend and enjoy your friend. Yeah. So I think that's a good point, Peter, that intention doesn't necessarily imply any kind of resultant activity or goal. So Kodo Zawaki's words are totally appropriate for this.
Thank you.
Yeah, something to add to this, Peter, is in the Jhumir Samadhi, one of the lines says that when erroneous imaginations cease, when erroneous imagination cease, when the fabrication, when our typical fabrication of mental production in practice ceases, when erroneous imagination cease, when we are present in our practice, and our practice, we set up, our practice is in a sense a kind of fabrication, in that we set up a specific situation where we can be still and we can be quiet. And this is Dongshan again, wrote the Jhulmir Samadhi. When erroneous imagination cease, the acquiescent mind realizes itself. And that word acquiescent is a really important word that is part of our intentionality. Acquiescent doesn't mean in this instance just to, I think we sometimes understand it like just agreeing or just accepting. But acquiescent means that you're actually ready. You're ready to receive something. You're willing. You not only do you consent to, and permit to receive the present moment, say in practice, or receive the fabrications in your mind, and be willing to look at the fabrications in your mind, in your practice, and see that you're in your practice, that you are constructing a world, and to be with that and to study that. This acquiescent mind that can realize itself is the mind that the mind of intention, the mind of that is willing to or is ready to receive something. And this is the kind of fertile mind. This is a kind of ready, fertile mind in practice. After you've settled your mind in shamatha, settling, being with your breath, settling, you quiet your mind, then vipassana, the mind that sees, comes forth and sees the fabrications of how we, you could say, how we construct the world, how we make a self, and is willing to be with that and I would say one of the events of practice that happens is in seeing that fabrication, the mind of practice turns and sees the origin of that fabrication, sees its arising. And in seeing its arising, it sees the mind before fabrication. And seeing the mind before fabrication, it's released. And that's enough. That's enough. That's really enough. Anyone else would, I'm sorry to be carrying on so long. Would anyone else like to add something or have a question?
Yes, may I add something?
Yeah, yeah.
So the question reminded me of this quote I read recently in this book called The Secret of the Golden Flower. And it was a very, very complex book, but I didn't read it fully, but this quote kind of struck out to me. And the quote said, using action to arrive at non-action. So this question made me think that it's true that, or we believe that there is no goal and there is no purpose and there is no self. but we believe that and we trust that, but we haven't realized that. So we use action and intention. An intention may be called as an action to arrive at that non-action, or in Taoist term they call it wu wei. Non-action. So our intention and sitting is to realize that there is no goal and no purpose, and we sit with that trust.
Yeah. Or you could say, that's wonderful what you said. Or you could say that not only that there's no practice, but that it's already here, the practice, and it's already complete, or it's already fulfilled, which is kind of the same thing as what you said.
Yes.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, that was beautiful by Corn. I was, before he spoke, I was thinking of an instruction from Okamura Roshi. And relating it to what the question that Peter asked, which is a question from myself. You know, the non-gaining mind, Zazen is good for nothing, per kodo suwaki, and the aspiration and intention. So can you have an aspiration and have a non-gaining mind at the same time? And it seems to me like it depends on the direction in which you're arriving at this. By that I mean, so Okamura Roshi said, the key part of Heart Sutra is constantly to negate the sense of the self. That's the emptiness, constantly negate the sense of the self, like a separate self. So if the intention is to experience your interconnection with all things, we know it in our mind and maybe we know it in our heart, but to live in accord with that more and more, then, and with that intention to sit, that's not an intention to gain something for yourself. That's an intention to lose your sense of separate self. To free yourself from that sense of separate self, and the process to free all others from your sense of separate self. Which I, yesterday when I was walking on the beach, it came to me that maybe this is what Buddha meant by together with all beings, I'm free. That togetherness. He didn't achieve a personal enlightenment. He freed all beings of his sense of self-importance and self. And I saw in so many ways that I haven't done that in my life. But the thing is that the beautiful thing of it is that I was seeing in the beach, you know, I was seeing these seals. I saw a dead seal again yesterday. Actually, it's been weird. But at the same time, I was, anyway, I'm going on and on and on. But I saw that even when I don't see this sense of connection, that I just keep coming back to it. It's there. Even when I don't see it. But I think the practice, as I understand it, is to see it more and more, you know, in your everyday life, in everyday occurrence. Anyway, so the main thing I want to say is this intention and gaining mind and aspiration. It just depends on which direction you're coming at this. What's your, you know, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but anyway, that's what I meant to say.
Well, it's nice. It's nice to hear from you, that you have a sense of confidence or trust in your practice way. And I felt that in what you said, that you have along with your uncertainties, a kind of basis that's a trust or confidence in your practice path. And that's good to hear. So thank you for sharing that. It's good. Yeah, it's strange, you know, the monk had to take himself up to the mountain, take a self up to that mountain to reach the peak. He had to bring himself up to that mountain and up to the peak of that mountain to find there was no one there. Like Dogen said, you know, we begin our study with this difficult and exacting work of studying ourselves, of actually asking ourselves what's going on, what is this body-mind complex that's conscious and is asking the question, and ourselves, then from the study of ourselves, we're from the, I would say, confident and from the power of the study of ourselves, from the courage to study ourselves, we are able to release self. And when we release self, surprisingly, all the world comes forward and confirms you, supports you, and is you. We have to, every once in a while, because practice seems sometimes routine, and we're here at Chikoji, it's an everyday event, and I think many of you at home, it's an everyday event, which actually takes even more courage on my part, of my understanding, to practice independently, to every day come and meet yourself in this particular way. We have to remind ourselves that this is activity, that Zazen, that this non-doing is doing. Wu Wei is sometimes translated as non-doing, but Wu Wei also means spontaneous or effortless or natural functioning. We have to remind ourselves that once in a while that it is an activity. We're doing this. We're at Chikoji recently. Some of these folks at Chikoji were moving rocks and building paths. They were doing it. It was an activity. It was activity. They were doing it. And the practice of Zazen, of this non-doing, oddly enough, is a doing, you know, and let's do it, you know. This is a new time, a new administration. Spring is coming, the days are getting longer, and we have the energy, we have the life, we have our life. The phoenix is rising, life is coming forward in the fog, right, Jerome? It comes sometimes in the fog, but it comes forward. So
I just want to assert that there was no one there moving those rocks. and that brings me to the question about Longzhang, who asked this guy, when you got to the top, what'd you find? He said, no one was there. Well, the guy was there, the monk was there, but he obviously didn't see himself as one to be there. And maybe that was kind of a confirmation.
That was his turning point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So no one moved those rocks? That's what you're saying? And these were, by the way, for those of you that weren't here, these were big rocks. These were serious rocks.
Michael, were the rocks not moved because the Cleveland people weren't there?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're still recuperating.
The Cleveland folks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah, they're good. They've been known to be good rock movers. Yeah.
Right.
That's right. We need them back.
Yeah. We'll be there.
We're missing you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm missing you guys too.
Well, hopefully by spring, everyone will be nicely vaccinated and we can be about our lives again.
Susan Topa has a question.
Someone? Susan?
Thank you so much for that talk. I'm still holding that image of the rings, of those deep ancient redwoods that surround you there, that are, you know, around Jokoji and around my kid's home nearby. So when you mentioned the rings, it was Dogen, right?
That was Koban.
It was Koban. Yes, that makes sense. It was Koban, because he's been there too.
Yeah.
So those rings and that idea of us, I mean, this is the paradox I'm feeling from the conversation of the being and non-being. And the intentionality, if we set that in Hebrew, it would be called kavana. So setting an intention, kavana. So setting an intention, it sounds very much an individual act, something that we do for ourselves. And so if we sit with that intention of envisioning our collapsing, aging bodies who are now all of a sudden developing these powerful rings, as you describe the energy as power. So I really grabbed that. I just loved it. And then to look at that as a way to expand it to our interbeing. So as we are fully connected to everything else, then as that image of the tree and all of the new information about how trees communicate, it brought back that whole web for me. But yet I'm still grappling with how to let go of such firm images and concepts so that becomes just sitting. Can you help that gap?
What you said reminded me of something else that Coleman said. He I don't have the exact words here, but he said he practiced Kudo, the practice of this Zen archery, which is kind of a meditative practice, and it's a very beautiful practice. And the people who practiced Kudo didn't worry about hitting a target per se. They worked on the form and the mind of the archer of how to be present with the What's it called? The Yama, the bow and the arrow. And I watched Koban a number of times with Shibata Sensei in Boulder and other places do Kudo, and it was very, very beautiful. He said something like, when the arrow has left the archer, it's no longer your concern. It is beyond your realm. What we have to do as practitioners, as kind of these markers of the way, you know, these people who are willing to be quiet and still and present as kind of a source for, and you could say a kind of energy source for, that's basically a gift to the whole world. What we have to do is just have this good form of the bow and the arrow and the release of the arrow. And after it has left our realm, it's no longer our concern. It may hit the target, it may not. But our work is to be a good kudo person and just release our arrow and let it go into the world. So thanks for bringing that up, Susan.
Thank you.
Good point. That we do, it does extend. It does extend. It does affect the world, these small little actions of being still, and being present, and non-fabricating, non-fashioning our existence for once. Yeah. This quietness, this returning that we do does affect the world.
Ben, thank you.
Is something?
Yes. Thank you. First of all, I want to say thank you for your talk. And I want to express something that's pretty obvious to most of you here. But I would guess, I was just reflecting on my annoyance that I couldn't hear your talk because it kept cutting out. And then I went, wait a minute, no. I'm very glad that it keeps cutting out because that means it's raining and you need rain. So
thank you Rain.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it was both annoying but then good in reflection, and I feel that I heard almost everything you were saying, and more strongly actually since it was raining, and it reminded me to step back and listen a little bit more.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are we? Pamela. Hi, Pamela.
Hi. I really appreciate the talk. I found it very encouraging. And it's nice to be reminded that our effort is noble. I think that was like a little pat on the head. Yeah, keep going. And I was very interested in the intention piece of this. And it strikes me that when I sit I don't sit down with an intention like today I'm going to achieve this, but I do sit down with the intention, even though it's not usually expressed, to meet whatever shows up, you know, to meet whatever shows up in the mirror of my practice. And in doing that, I have to say that I felt this, you know, very strong sense of personal power. I think I've told you, Mike, that I sometimes feel like I'm incredibly awesome. And, and not in a puffy way, not just that I am awesome, but that everybody's awesome.
Like, everybody's awesome.
Like everybody's really incredibly awesome. And it feels in the moment that that is, as much as I'm saying I'm awesome and everybody's awesome, it almost feels like I'm getting fed and that I'm feeding that back, like in some kind of endless loop. Mm. And so thank you for the encouragement that it's a noble act. I don't remember that it takes courage. I just keep doing it, like brushing my teeth. And it's good to get a little pat on the head. So thank you.
Well, speaking of eating, I think we've eaten up our time here. Thank you, everyone. And
is it possible you can read Comencino's quote one more time, Mike, because the rain stopped part of that?
Okay.
Sorry, maybe that's just a good thing to end.
Is that okay with everyone? Should I read it again? Yeah. Okay. By the way, this is from an article that was published in Buddha Dharma. It was published in Buddha Dharma a number of years ago. And there's a PDF available. Nico could send it out to everyone if they're interested of this PDF. It's a nice compilation. It was well edited by the Buddha Dharma folks some of Koban's teachings. So Nico, if you can request from Nico, she can send it out. I'll get it to you, Nico, okay?
Okay, thank you.
So Koban's words again. The power of meditation and wisdom together is called Jo-Riki. Jo is samadhi, and ki is spiritual energy, compassion, and wisdom. Existence, the world of phenomena, is power itself, but each thing doesn't have power. If you presume a self-authorized power, you shrink existence. If you do not presume power, power can fill existence. Because form is also the process of cessation, power cannot be possessed, but it can be felt. For people who deny the existence of power, there is no power. At this level, it is just a concept. In the same way we could deny holiness, and with that tainted concept, there is no holiness. But if we begin to feel power, we see that everyone has power and everything has power. Existence is made of power. Life is energy itself. This energy and power is generously dispersed into all things. Power is experienced when you meditate because your meditation is the action of the denial of your personal power. So you become the center of the power, but you do not have power. It's like the existence of bowing. When you really feel your bow, when bowing, you are nothing. You do not have anything. You are actually nothing. You disappear. You are like the dust on the earth. But when you stand up as a person, a particular existence, and you feel everything. At that time, you are ready to walk. Jo-Riki is like a tree standing straight in the winter and making strong rings. The strength is important to feel. We have the same action as the tree, depending on the change of seasons, the water, the sunshine, and so forth, it forms rings. The experience of samadhi, concentration, and meditation makes those rings of human existence. That is the real age of the person.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.